Well, we're continuing our series in Exodus this morning. We've been looking at the, not just the simply the Exodus event, but looking at the book of Exodus and about what God was doing to prepare his people to receive his promises and to experience all that he had for them. Now, when we talk about the whole thing of Exodus, like I said, most of the time we have a tendency to focus in just on that single event. But really, in the events leading up to it, God is speaking through all of those events, not just simply winning and making the Exodus possible, but teaching us through those events. Now, one of the things that I have seen again and again in terms of leadership is that one of the greatest struggles in leadership and for a leader is in this whole area of helping people with their problems, their weaknesses, their desire to get someplace and trying to figure out their path for doing that. And it's a big part of being a leader is in helping people with those kinds of things, helping people find a way, navigate a course. It's also one of the things that leaders most often struggle with. How do you help someone deal with their own problems, let alone with your problems? What do you do to help people work through their weaknesses? And then always, not always, you know, is advice well met? Or well-received, I should say. A lot of times the things that we intend don't come off the right way. But the goal is ultimately to help people to grow in the areas where they are trying to grow. Now, one of the things that I recognize as a leader, and it doesn't matter whether you're talking about church leadership or whether you're talking about leadership at school or work or maybe even in your home, is that when you're looking for ways to solve problems, here's the thing. It's really easy to identify problems. Everybody knows what the problems are. They're in discomfort. They're going through the struggles and the trials along with you. But, you know, it's not leadership simply to just point out things. If we just simply say to somebody, this is your weakness, well, that's not very helpful, is it? You know, a lot of times that the leadership comes down to kind of the lowest common denominator where we start pointing at a problem. We can see it throughout the scriptures even at times, where people were up in arms having a difficult time, and the person who ends up leading is the person with the loudest voice who goes, this is the problem. They don't really offer any solutions. They just scream, this is the problem. And everybody goes, yeah, and they all go charging out together and do nothing but make a disaster of everything. And so as we talk about this whole issue of leadership and talk about real solution, one of the things I've learned over the years is that as I'm looking for who the other leaders on the team are going to be, are not just those who can identify the squeaky door. We all know the door squeaks, but the real difference between, an authentic leader and someone just kind of being the loud voice is that they actually come up with solutions or ideas for solving the problems around you. So that real leadership doesn't just say, hey, the door's squeaking. Real leadership says, hey, I've got an idea about how to fix that. Whether it solves the problem or not, they are looking for ways to solve the problem, not just identify it. Now, as we look here in this whole situation in Egypt with the nation of Israel in captivity, we are in the middle of Operation Desert Freedom, the war between God and Egypt. The battles are heating up so far. We're going to find that Pharaoh is 4-0 in the battle. You know, he hasn't learned a single lesson from the whole thing. Today, we're going to be talking about three battles: the battle of the frogs, the battle of the gnats, and the battle of the flies. Really going to bug you, but it's an ugly scenario filled with lots of lessons for us as we learn from this conflict. If we'll just simply hear beyond the surface of those events and look at what God is teaching us through Exodus chapter 8. Exodus chapter 8, I'm going to be in the English Standard Version. Please read along in whatever translation you have or follow along on the screen overhead. Exodus chapter 8, beginning in verse 1. Then the Lord said to Moses, go into Pharaoh and say to him, thus says the Lord, let my people go that they may serve me. But if you refuse to let them go, behold, I will plague all of your country with frogs. And the Nile shall swarm with frogs. It shall come up into your homes, into your bedroom, and on your bed, and into the house of your servants and your people, and into your ovens and your kneading bowls. And the frogs shall come up on you and on your people and on all your servants. And the Lord said to Moses, say to Aaron, stretch out your hand with your staff over the rivers, over the canals, and over the pools, and make frogs come up onto the land of Egypt. So Aaron stretched out his hand over the waters of Egypt, and the frogs came and covered the land of Egypt. But the magicians did the same by their secret arts and made frogs come up on the land of Egypt. Then Pharaoh called Moses and Aaron and said, "Plead with the Lord to take away the frogs from me and from my people, and I will let the people go to sacrifice to the Lord." Moses said to Pharaoh, "Be pleased to command me when I am to plead for you, for your servants, and for your people, that the frogs be cut off from you and your houses and be left only in the Nile." And he said, "Tomorrow." Why on earth he would say tomorrow, I can't imagine. But he said, "Tomorrow." And Moses said, "Be as it as you say, so that you may know that there is no one like the Lord our God. The frogs shall go away from you and your houses and your servants and your people, and they shall be left only in the Nile." So Moses and Aaron went out from Pharaoh. Moses cried to the Lord about the frogs as he agreed with Pharaoh. And the Lord did according to the word of Moses. And the frogs died in their houses and in their courtyards and in the fields. And they gathered them together in heaps. And the land stank. You just kind of get a whiff of that. And when Pharaoh saw that there was respite, he hardened his heart and would not listen to them as the Lord had said. Then the Lord said to Moses, "Say to Aaron, stretch out your staff and strike the dust of the earth so that it becomes gnats in all the land of Egypt." And they did so, and Aaron stretched out his hand with his staff and struck the dust of the earth, and there were gnats on man and beast, and all the dust of the earth became gnats in the land of Egypt. And the magicians tried by their secret arts to produce gnats, but they could not, so that there were gnats on man and beast. And then the magician said to Pharaoh, "This is the finger of God." But Pharaoh hardened his heart, and he would not listen to them, as the Lord had said. Then the Lord said to Moses, "Rise up early in the morning and present yourself to Pharaoh as he goes out to the water, and say to him, 'Thus says the Lord, let my people go that they may serve me, or else, if you will not let my people go, behold, I will send swarms of flies on you and your servants and your people and into your houses, and the house of the Egyptians shall be filled with swarms of flies, and also the ground on which they stand. But on that day, I will set apart the land of Goshen where my people dwell, so that no swarms of flies will be there, that you may know that I am the Lord in the midst of the earth. Thus I will put a division between my people and your people. Tomorrow this sign shall happen.' And the Lord did so. And there came a great swarm of flies into the house of Pharaoh and into his servants throughout all the land of Egypt. The land was ruined by the swarm of flies. Then Pharaoh called Moses and Aaron and said, 'Go sacrifice to your God within the land.' But Moses said, 'It would not be right to do so. For the offerings we shall sacrifice to the Lord our God are an abomination to the Egyptians. If we sacrifice offerings abominable to the Egyptians, they will stone us. We must go 3 days' journey into the wilderness and sacrifice to the Lord our God as he tells us.' So Pharaoh said, 'I will let you go to sacrifice to the Lord your God in the wilderness, only you must not go far away. Plead for me.' Then Moses said, 'Behold, I am going out from you, and I will plead with the Lord that the swarms of flies may depart from Pharaoh, from his servants, and from his people tomorrow.'" Ouch. "Only not let not Pharaoh cheat again by not letting the people go to sacrifice to the Lord." So Moses went out from Pharaoh and prayed to the Lord, and the Lord did as Moses asked and removed the swarms of flies from Pharaoh, from his servants, and from his people. Not one remained, but Pharaoh hardened his heart this time also and did not let the people go. You know, when we look at the problems facing Egypt in this war between God and Egypt, you know, we've got three new battles: frogs, gnats, flies. It's a really, truly ugly scenario. Egypt is being, or should I say, Pharaoh is being defeated at every turn. And yet, the thing that amazes us is that how he seems to be going down in flames. He's been defeated three times just in this scenario, a fourth time earlier, and he doesn't have a single win in his column. And yet, every time he waves the flag of surrender, he lies about it as if, like, that's going to make everything work out. He's showing to us, really, just a lack of integrity in his leadership. In fact, as we just look at his leadership across the board, you know, many times the people suffer, don't they, for bad leadership. when leadership is in place and they make decisions that are painful to other people and will not relent. And in this case in particular, the part of the problem is he not only has, not only is there a problem with his leadership, but he doesn't have good advisors around him either. At this point, what have they done really? I want you to think about this. It just really kind of recently occurred to me. I've read this text many times over and over again. But one of the things that occurred to me recently as I was reading through this again, and it hit me that in the middle of this, his advisors don't fix anything. Have you thought about that for a moment? What do? They are trying to imitate the misery that's going on around them. There's leadership for you. Okay? We're not gonna just imitate the misery around it, but we're gonna do a bad job of it. So let's think about this. We've got the Nile turning to blood. The whole stinking Nile is turned to blood, and they make a little bucket of blood. A bad imitation of the real deal. We've got frogs everywhere. They're in everything. They're even in the bread and in the ovens. It's like living in Florida sometimes when you try to get in your car, you know. And there's frogs everywhere. And what do? They go, oh, well, yeah, we can make frogs. And they make a handful of frogs and, you know, or seem to make a handful of frogs. And I don't know, I'm looking at the comparison, little bucket of blood, handful of frogs, Nile full of blood, Nile full of frogs, ovens full of frogs. It's not even a good comparison. But the thing that's amazing in this is that the people who are being followed or sought for advice, I mean, really, that your solution to this big thing is, well, we can make people miserable too. And they're doing a great job of it, aren't they? They're doing a great job of making everybody, including themselves, miserable. Kind of an interesting caveat in this, though, as you look at it, one of the things I think is interesting is last week when we talked about this whole issue of Pharaoh's heart being hardened, and we talked about how the actions of God can either harden a person's heart or soften a person's heart, depending on how we come to the Lord and how we experience those things. And one of the things I want to really make a point here is that it really goes home to drive it that it's Pharaoh hardening his heart in response to the things that God is doing. So God's doing the things, and in that way you could say God is hardening his heart, but the truth is what's happening is that as he's experiencing those things, the very things that would melt most people's heart, the very thing that would cause most people to buckle their knees and say, enough, enough already, not being able to drink water for 7 days, having every bit of our water filled with blood, enough already. Frogs everywhere, even in my bed and in my bread, enough already. I like frog legs, but that's not, you know, going to work out in the stench. Can you imagine the smell of rotting amphibians everywhere? And then the Nile, even though the Nile is run clear, where it's overflowed its bank and that blood on the ground just rotting day after day. I mean, in every way, they are being assaulted. Not just assaulted in the sense of that they can't drink the water and they can't eat their food and everything else, which would be plenty. That'd push, let's face it. We're in Brooksville, Florida, right? If all these things happened in just a couple of weeks here, like we'd be dropping trees across people's driveways, guns would be out, the whole city would be on lockdown, you know? I mean, it would be crazy around here. I guarantee you, nobody would move. And Egypt is just trying to act like nothing's happened. Oh, no, it'll all go away. It'll all go away. They're absolutely kidding themselves, and the smell of death is everywhere. And their response is just simply, well, we'll make more death. We'll make more to rot and stink. And finally, when they come to the point, they finally get a clue. And they look at him and they say, hey, you know, don't want to change our minds about anything here, but I think this is God. You think? I think this is God. Maybe Pharaoh, maybe you ought to back up a little bit, back up the truck. Maybe, you know, maybe we ought to really reconsider this thing. This looks like the finger of God. And the response of Pharaoh is just so unbelievable that not only would he choose to continue to press ahead, I mean, all the evidence is there. This is like the worst king of Egypt ever. Not only is all the evidence there, but then he thinks he's going to lie to God. Oh, no, yeah, no, I'll let the people go, as if he's tricking God. You ever notice the patience of God when people lie to him? I know a lot of times we think to ourselves, why doesn't God just smite them right then and there? And then I look in the mirror. Anybody here ever lied to God? You know, I'm sorry. Nobody here would ever lie to God. But my being a frail person that I am, you know, I've said these crazy things, you know, like, God, I will never do that again if. Or, you know, God, you get me out of this, and I will always. Oh, did you do it too? I saw you mouthing, you know. The thing is, aren't you glad that God doesn't deal with us like that? You see, Pharaoh isn't really any different than the rest of us. I mean, clearly he's a terrible leader, and he's hardened his heart. But this whole thing of him lying to God, and we think, what is it? You know, I heard somebody say one time, well, it takes a special kind of stupid to lie to God. No, it takes ordinary stupid. I've done it. And the result of your foolishness when you say those things is, of course, that it doesn't work. But the worst part is what it does to you. You see, one of the things that I've realized along the way is that while God is forgiving, and he forgives me a lot of things, I mean, he forgives me of all my sins, you know, the problem is that after he forgives me, is that I remember, and it affects my relationship with the Lord. Not because he puts the wall up, but because I put the walls up. You see, one of the things that happens to me whenever I lie to God and I make declarative statements like that, I will never, I will always, I'm going to start, and then I don't follow through with those things, the next time that God is moving in my life, and I want to make those declarative statements of faith, I want to launch out in faith, the enemy is right there to whisper in my ear, like the last promise you didn't keep. And before I even get started down that road of faith, of heroic leadership, of doing the right thing in the right moments, the enemy has called me so into question that I lose all my steam, all my hope, and the enemy wins before I ever take a step, because I know in my heart of hearts that I didn't fulfill my word. I don't keep my promises. And I don't want to look like that again. I don't want to make empty promises to God. And you see, the thing is that because God is merciful, because he's kind, because he's loving, especially in those moments when you and I cry out to God, we say, I will never, God, if you will get me out of the situation, I will never. You know, the thing is he's not a God who isn't accustomed to our frailties, that he doesn't know our weaknesses, that he's caught unaware of who we are. That's why he doesn't deal with us as our sins deserve in the moment. So there's that opportunity for you and I to turn around and to do what it is that God has given us. But the fear, fears are a very real deal, that when you and I lie to God, you see people say, well, what difference does it make? God will forgive me. It makes all the difference in the world. Yeah, God forgives. But it doesn't mean that the consequences are all gone. It doesn't mean that we don't struggle. It doesn't mean that you and I don't have secret places in our hearts where the enemy just shreds us every time we step out to do something great for God. And he'll accuse you. He'll find every place where you stumbled and dig it back up, won't he? Because that's what he does. So can I ask you? The next time you feel tempted to lie to God, not in fear of judgment, not in fear of just simply that you're going to make a mistake or whatever else, but simply to say to the Lord, you know, God, I don't know how this is going to turn out, and I don't know how I'm going to handle this, but would you give me mercy? Would you give me mercy? So Pharaoh, here's the deal. Pharaoh is outgunned in the miracle department. I mean, even the guys around him are going, look, I can't make gnats. I can make frogs. I don't know how they did that. I don't, you know, sleight of hand, cool little magic tricks and everything. This is some pretty cool stuff, smoke and mirrors. But here's the deal. Ultimately, they come to this point and they go, we can't keep up. We can't make everybody as miserable as this. Oh, wait a minute. Well, one of the interesting things that happens in this is that usually we put all of our focus on what happens to Pharaoh and to Egypt. But there's the silent part of this story. The lesson learned by Israel. You see, in the midst of all of this, they're watching these things unfold. They're watching and learning about the character and the nature of God, because here's the thing, they really don't know. I mean, these are the first five books. They're being written. These are the events that are writing those books. They're not written yet. These moments, they're not recorded. They haven't been able to study these stories and learn from them yet. They don't have Torah. They don't have instruction. They don't have law. They just barely know that Yahweh, I am that I am, is their God. That's really all they know. And in the midst of this, they're finding out who God is. In the midst of this, you and I are finding out who God is. You see, when people say, oh, God, in the Old Testament, he's so tough and he likes strike. Really? 10 times. When was the last time your teacher let you take an exam 10 times to get it right? You just get an F for I forgot or I failed to study. Maybe you get a C. See, you're just, it's average response. But with God, there's the opportunity that you and I get to do it over and over and over. Do you ever feel like you're like deja vu? You know, you're in that moment where you go, gosh, like 10 years ago, I did something stupid like this, and it feels just like that. And God says, it's all right, I love you. I'm giving you another opportunity to learn the lesson. Hello? See, God doesn't let you fail. He just keeps bringing those lessons back into our lives until we learn them. So Israel's in the midst of learning about a God who is merciful and who is compassionate, who doesn't give up on people the first time that they turn away and do foolish things. Even when in the midst of somebody who lies and everything else, that God is patient and working things out in the midst of them, that God is providing for them. But here's one of the painful parts in this whole thing. In the midst of God showing his hand of might and power, Israel doesn't escape everything. In the midst of God bringing judgment on a land, Israel doesn't escape everything. You see, sometimes there's this theology out there in church. Sometimes it's taught from pulpits. Most of the time, I think it's something that we have tried to convince ourselves of, is that, you know, well, if I'm on God's side, that nothing difficult or painful or anything like that is ever going to happen to me again. And it is a lie right out of the pit of hell. It really is. It's a terrible deception. And you think, well, why would God, you know, here's the deal. In the midst of those plagues and difficulties, do you think Pharaoh, if he could have ran next door to the land of Goshen and taken water, he wouldn't have gone and commandeered all their water and taken it from them anyhow? Sure he would have. This is the kind of guy who let his own people suffer for an entire week without any water to drink at all and thumbed his nose at God. You think he wouldn't go into the land of Goshen and take all the water? When the frogs came up and they couldn't even make their bread anymore, do you think that Pharaoh would have just said, well, hey, those Israelites have got bread. Let's go get some Hallel bread, man. That's going to be yummy. I can't wait. And just yank it right out of the mouths of it. You see, we have our perspective, and then there's the bigger perspective. And so sometimes it's the people of God. When hardship comes and difficulty comes, we have to remember that God is good even in the midst of the hardship and the difficulty. It's really easy to see that when God doesn't do it my way, if he doesn't make it comfortable enough for me, then to say that God's not good. or that God doesn't care. But God's in the midst of delivering them, not just for the day, not just for the week, not just for the month of these events, but for a lifetime of freedom. And in the midst of that, some pain and difficulty comes their way. It's just the reality of living in a fallen world. But it doesn't mean that God's not good in the midst of it. It's important that we never forget that. You see, the real pupils in all of this is really not Pharaoh. Pharaoh is not listening. He is hard of heart. He is defying everyone. Even his own leadership is now going, I don't want anything to do with this guy. You know, when they go back and they study the pharaohs of the time period of the Exodus, that their names are wiped out. Because even their own people were ashamed of what they did. Nobody records and says, hey, we had this great pharaoh one time who absolutely lost everything and destroyed our nation. Whoa, let's build some temples to him. No, they don't do that. They pull out the stone, wipe their name off, and put the stone around the other way with somebody else's name on it. They wiped their memories as best as they could of this guy because he was so incompetent and so destructive. But the reality is that along the way, sometimes the people of God got caught up in some really painful stuff. It was really difficult. And as the people of God, when we feel like things are happening around us and we get caught up in the collateral damage of it all, that it's really important in the midst of that we don't forget who God is. That we don't start to join the other side and blame God for what Pharaoh does. Hello? And then here's the thing is that even as Pharaoh is making it harder and harder and harder in the midst of all of this, and they're, every time God intervenes, he says, make bricks without straw, and he does all these things to make life really difficult for them, is that God is in the process of bringing hope and deliverance, even in the midst of trial. See, some of the lessons that I learned really quick is that not only is God good regardless of what's happening in the moment, but also, the lessons of leadership. That we don't just sit here and shout about how terrible things are, how awful things are, but that we respond and that we act differently, that we stop and take assessment and make changes. And here's the deal. The difficulty of life comes to everyone. Life is not static. Anything in the world that is static is dead. And when you and I aren't willing to meet the things as they come at us, those challenges, those difficulties, those trials that come our way, when things are out there are changing more rapidly than maybe you feel comfortable or whatever else, whether it's technology or the events or your town or society or whatever else, we can stand here and fret and die in our fret. But change and those circumstances will run you down and keep pressing forward. The only way that things stop changing in your life is you die. I mean, it ought to be a warning. I mean, we've got churches all over the city that their first prayer request is, our church is dying because we didn't want to change. You see, the truth is that even in dying, things are going to change. Everything changes. But here's the thing that I see in the midst of all this is that as they're getting ready to leave Egypt and difficulties coming their way and trials and circumstances and everything, just the onslaught is coming at them, is that when they finally figure out that God is good and they head out into the land of Exodus, they're making their Exodus out, they're going to the promised land. Guess what the promised land means? Change. Things are going to happen. They're going to have to do battle. They're going to go out. They're going to experience all kinds of things. But here's the deal. What the promised land was about was not because it meant no more difficulties or trials or circumstances, but that God would go with them. And see, the thing I've discovered in the midst of my trials and difficulty and circumstances is that I've never gotten there before God. I've never gotten to a situation in life before God was there. Now, I've been to some places in my life through mission work and things like that where people just swore that God wasn't there. And you know what? He was there. Because one of the realities is that no matter how great the darkness, that the light is greater. No matter how dark it is, I'm so sick of these excuses. Well, you just don't know how difficult it is in our town. Bull. It's not darker than it was the day that Jesus hung on the cross. It's a sorry excuse. Because although dark and light are opposites, they are not equals. Even the littlest bit of light can dispel the greatest darkness. There's no greatness dark enough to stop the light. And so the message of Exodus is not simply just getting someplace else. It's not just the event of leaving there, but it's God preparing his people for the future. A future with him. You know what? God's preparing you for your future too. A future with him. A future in this world and a future in the life to come. But here's what I know is that it will be different. God in his kindness, he does this to me on occasion. I have to say it's his kindness. I'm just, you know, because this morning I wasn't thinking of it as kindness. But this morning I was working on some things and I wanted to make a change in something, and lo and behold, technology was not working on my behalf this morning. And everything just kind of disappeared off my iPad. And I was like, oh, no. And so I was working feverishly and things were, you know, they were just gone. And then I discovered, oh, no, they're on my laptop. And so I went back to the laptop. I fixed everything. I tried to put it back on. It wouldn't go back on. And I was just frustrated. In the midst of that, I was like, you know, maybe I'm just depending too much on technology. And I walked over to my bookshelves where my old preaching notebook was, and I pulled it off. And in there was a message that was, you know, like I had written on things, and there was some smears and all that. And I started thinking to myself, you know, I remember times where I pulled this notebook out and the wrong message was in there. Last week's message or something else. I grabbed the wrong copy of that notebook, and I remember times where I left that notebook someplace, and on Sunday morning I was thinking, I'm going to pull out my notebook, I'm going to head to the church, and I open it up, and wait a minute, that's not the right notebook. Notebook. Oh, I left that notebook at the other church. You see, here's the deal is that, you know, the problem really wasn't the technology. Maybe you're having a hard time adapting to some things in the world around you. But here's the thing I know is that every time that you and I tighten our grip and we refuse to move forward with the things that come our way, what we're essentially saying is that God can't meet us in the future. And you want the perfect picture of that? It's the Amish. They think that God only works in the 17th century. And so they're still trying to live the 17th century. When technology and other changes and societal changes and all those things come your way, I think one of the best things you could do is take a moment and flip back through history and find out there's nothing new under the sun. And that every time God's people have advanced forward, not only have they found difficulty and trial and hardship, but they've always found that God was there on the other side. There's nothing that's going to happen, no technology, no events, no politics, no persons, not even an antichrist, that can stop God from being there in your future. Or you can just cave and give in right now. A lot of people are living like that, completely under their circumstances, suffocating. Do you want to move forward? I do. Let's stand again.